how we overstarted the overlapping full-back game. People said, oh, it was my innovation. Well, it wasn't really. They quite often used to play two men on him, full-back, and then the number 11 or the left winger would go back and double up. So if he got past him, he'd have another one. So I said to Stan, in all humbleness one day, I said, the two of them were stood like that. If I went round the outside, put the ball through, you know, I might be able to get to the ball. And he looked at me and went, no. So I went back, and we were playing Luton, and we were winning 2 or 3 nil, I remember. I got the ball, I gave it to Stan. Went up, had two lads drop back. So I set off round the outside, and Stan put the ball through, right through the gap, and I was through, on my own, coming in at the right side. Anyway, I shot wide. So we go in the dressing room after the game, thankfully we'd won. And Joe Smith, the manager, said to me, what was that all about? Wing play, what's all that about? I said, well, I saw space, and I thought, you know. He said, I don't really notice. The number 7 we've got has done quite well without your help so far. He wasn't very keen on it. It was only when Joe went, you know, that we liberated it a bit more. But there it was. With England, you know, we started doing it.
Hello and welcome to the Sandford Podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and joining me this week is Terry DeFellin.
Hello.
Yeah, just Terry this week.
Yep.
Jan's taken one of his annual leave days again.
He has, yeah, on a Monday.
How come he gets a leave card and we don't?
I don't know. Well, I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah.
I'm sure he's got his reasons.
I'm sure he has.
I'm sure they're good reasons.
They're very, very good reasons as well. Just us two this week, so yeah, you're not going to have any of his northern charm around here, like, you know, just like throwing in little peppers of wisdom, you know. It's just going to be us.
Yeah.
Us old hands.
Oh, yes, indeed, yeah, yes. But none of that Bilton sagacity.
No.
Which is a shame.
Yeah.
Because it's rare to say sagacity, so you know, it's a bit of a shame when he's not around, because I always think sage when
sage.
Bilton's around.
Yeah.
In a sagacious way, and not in an onion way.
Not in a stuffing balls type of way.
No. Oh, well, actually, now that you mention it.
Yes. What a week it's been in football, though, eh?
Yes,
it has been a week. I know I do say that every week.
Yeah.
But, well, yeah, I thought it was.
Because pretty much every week it has been a week in football.
It has, yeah. And lots happens.
Where do we begin?
Well, there's a couple of managerial shifts, weren't there?
Yes. Marco Silva.
Yes.
He's shifted.
Yes.
Out.
Yeah, the first I actually heard of that was when the new guy was actually appointed at Watford.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Oh, right, okay. Because I left a note on our WhatsApp group and with the, you know, vacancy at Watford.
Yes.
But their Hing fans, they said that they had already lined up Javi Garcia.
Javi Garcia. Not Javi Garcia.
Not Javi Garcia. No, this is his non-union equivalent.
Obviously so.
No, it's not. That's not the case. He used to play for... I can't remember whether he used... Obviously, he used to play in Spain. I can't remember who he used to play for. Villarreal and Sociedad, as it says here.
Yes.
According to his resume. Quite a long list of coaches, of teams that he's coached. So
yeah, most recently in Russia.
Yeah, interesting choice that. The ownership there at Watford's, I'd say they've got things down pretty good.
Yeah, they're quite set up for making interesting managerial choices there, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, some clubs make changes in their coaches regularly and it's all a bit chaotic and, you know, we're losing control. Like Palace, for example.
Yeah.
Whereas Watford, I think, recognised that actually the chaos of recruitment of coaches and sacking of coaches is just part of professional football and just seem to be, you know, ready for it. So they have a guy lined up in the event that they have to sack their coach. I wouldn't be surprised if they always have a guy lined up. It probably changes depending on whether or not the guy gets another job. But they've always got, right, we'll have this someone in, you know, ready that we can call upon to take over for when we sack this guy, for whatever reason it may be.
They are top half.
Yeah.
Just.
Yeah. But they are...
They are also in the bottom half. Yeah, 3 points away from relegation as well, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly.
Such is the insanity of the bottom half of the table at the moment in the Premier League.
Yes. Watford have been lucky I think, in the first half of the season.
Yes.
I think they've been lucky.
They certainly had a couple of results go their way that could easily have not gone their way.
Absolutely.
I'm thinking their home game against Arsenal and the first home game of the season against Liverpool that they drew 3-3.
True enough.
And there are probably other results.
And probably other results as well.
Yeah.
So they have been fortunate. Now that's fine. It's not a criticism because luck is a very, very, very important part of football.
Yeah.
You do need more than that, and it looks like they weren't having it.
Yeah.
So how much of it is genuinely, you know, his head was turned by Everton, or how much of it is that actually he wasn't doing as good a job as perhaps everyone thought he was doing, I don't know.
Or perhaps he actually knew that the other guy was lined up already.
Or maybe he knew that the other guy was lined up already. Yeah, but in any event, he's been booted out, and I don't doubt he'll be back. But it's interesting because all he's actually done is get sacked and get relegated, and in the Premier League, that is.
Yeah.
And for a coach of his reputation, the next job he needs to try and see if he can actually achieve something. Complete a full season might be an achievement in and of itself.
Yeah, when he was given the reins at Hull, they were going down anyway, weren't
That's
they?
True.
Really,
a defined job of nearly not relegating them.
Yeah, well. And now Swansea managed to escape, but they rewarded the manager that did that with the sack as well.
Yes.
So
Swansea could be an example of what I mean.
Yeah,
they tend to be in permanent crisis. And again, like I said, Palace as well seem to sort of like lurch from one crisis to the next. Perhaps Palace will not do that now that Roy is there, and he's unlikely at his stage in his career to be offered a bigger job elsewhere. So,
and I think we've said so before that this has all the hallmarks of being his last job, doesn't
it? Yeah, it would be nice if it was, in a way, because obviously being the local lad that he is, and he would, and hopefully he'll be with us for a couple of years, maybe 3 years, maybe longer. But he'll bring in a bit of stability, and then just allow everyone to settle and allow the club to just grow under him. But yeah, so interesting times. And of course, there's Paul Lambert as well, isn't there?
Yes.
What did you make of that?
Well, I think it's been a season of interesting managerial appointments.
Hmm.
Well, Swansea's one as well, Coverhall, who's basically sacked by Wednesday for not being very good, and then all of a sudden gets a Premier League gig.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden you've got Paul Lambert coming back to the Premier League after really, by most people's estimations, being not that great.
No, certainly not necessarily the first name that you'd think of when you're looking at a Premier League coach.
Is that an unfair appraisal of his managerial career? He has been lauded and he's done the right things. He's been to Europe, got all these badges and everything, He does seem to be doing all the right things.
He got his coaching badges at Cologne,
yeah,
as far as I know. He was a Tyro when he was at Colchester and then at Norwich.
Mm.
He was all went south for him when he went to Aston Villa.
Yeah.
And of course, this is something that does happen.
Mm.
Aston Villa have troubles that not one coach can necessarily, turn around. So, then he could have went downhill from there. He was last at Blackburn, wasn't he?
So I think he's just made a few bad choices in clubs. I mean, really, I mean,
he wants the job, doesn't he?
Stoke does sound like a really good fit for him, really.
Yeah.
That's a place that has got a little bit more stability.
Well, it's interesting because they've signed, I'm afraid I can't remember his name, but they signed a fullback from Augsburg, Stoke, that is, and I'd heard that he's actually been spending his time away in Germany scouting.
Ah.
So that I wonder whether or not maybe he's got some good reserve team or bench-dwelling Bundesliga players that he can pick up on loan or at relatively cheap and populate bolster that Stoke squad. I wonder whether or not that perhaps is part of the reason why he got the job. And maybe he just gives a good presentation.
He does know how to use PowerPoint.
Maybe. He knows how to use PowerPoint.
That's very frequently said on the podcast. also in Germany there was a managerial change as well, wasn't
there? Yes, indeed. Markus Hollerbach is the new coach of... I know, but it's already been done. You've been beaten to it, I'm afraid.
Okay.
Markus Gisdol was sacked and this new guy's come in. Würzburger Kickers was the last club that he managed, and not very well. So I don't
They're
know.
A household name over here, aren't they?
Yeah, indeed, yeah. I don't know quite what the story with that is. And again, I mean, Gisdol was gone and Hollerbach in straight away. Shit is bananas, stop it. Just shut up. Yeah, anyway, I think, frankly, the less said about that, the better, for obvious reasons. It all happened because, as I prophesied in the weekend box set, which, of course, subscribers will have known about, the ones that read it, I said that the reports were that Gisdol would be sacked if they lost to Cologne. And sure enough, they lost to Cologne, and sure enough, he was sacked.
Yeah.
And Cologne, on the other hand, because it's only two automatic spots in the Bundesliga, and because actually, historically, the third place playoff favours the third bottom team in the Bundesliga.
It does now. It never used to be that. When it was first introduced, it was the other way around.
But in recent years,
since they reintroduced it.
I think only Dusseldorf have actually gone up in that spot. There's a strong argument to say that it should be got rid of that. Chances are, if Cologne can make it into that third spot by May, then there's a good chance that they'll stay up.
They're not that far behind, are they?
And they're not that far behind.
They're having a bit of a sort of Palace affair there, aren't they? Really, after having such a bad start.
Yeah.
That everyone else down there is actually pretty poor, so they're actually not that far away from
They've gone on a run. Yeah. And if they can extend it, then they could actually be out of there quite quickly, which would be amazing. It's exciting times down there. But yet, Hamburg, no doubt, aware that this is something that could happen and they could find themselves bottom.
Yeah.
And they've had to use the relegation playoff a number of times and have used it to survive. But, you know, there may be no helping them now. There are those who feel that it would be good for Hamburg to be relegated. I wouldn't possibly say one way or the other.
Not the maintenance crew with that big clock they've got there.
No, they would know. No, those poor chaps would be the first to go, wouldn't they?
They would indeed.
Well, hopefully Hamburg can stay up just for those guys, because, you know, you don't want to see working men, you know, get put out of work, you know.
Well, hopefully they've got some kind of business plan where they're going to go up and say, look, we've got a good plan for this clock. We're just going to reset it, and it's going to be like times that we've been out of the top flight.
The clock's got a relegation clause.
Yeah. I haven't obviously. There you go. You're always thinking ahead, aren't you?
Indeed, yeah.
I hope the German's coming on well, so you can actually write all this stuff down and send it to them.
Yes, I may well do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was some very sad news today when we found out that Jimmy Armfield had died at the age of 82. So, had a good full life.
Yeah.
Played over 600 games for Blackpool.
Mm-hmm.
And played for England, was captain of England, was in the squad for the World Cup, and finally got his medal, I think, in 2010.
2009, I read.
2009, yeah. Believe it or not, listeners, we are too young to remember him as a player, and even as a manager, actually.
He was
a manager for most of the 70s. Obviously, we remember him most as a voice on Radio 5 Live.
Yes, and indeed Radio 2 before then.
Yes, indeed,
And a wonderful velvety voice as well, and a very grounded pundit and analyst.
Yeah.
And, I mean, by all accounts, an absolute gentleman to boot. But somebody who was just steeped in the game.
Yeah.
Just, you know, played it, managed it, watched it, and then just sort of like had football wisdom seeping out of his pores. And it just, you know, one of these guys who just had the sort of instinctive understanding of, you know, not just how the game was played, but also how players play, how players react.
Yeah.
And how they think about the game and what they should be doing and what they shouldn't be doing. And he just seemed to be able to adjust and move with the shifting and changing nature of football effortlessly.
Yeah.
He didn't seem to be fazed by any of it.
Well, his whole career was probably the most tumultuous in football, really, because, I mean, he starts his playing career back in the age of where the club would retain your contract, where you're on a maximum wage. And he goes through that whole playing career. The players that end all that are his peers.
Mm.
People like Don Howe, Jimmy Hill, George Eastham. Those are the players who are bringing about change. And he's there while this is happening during his career.
Mm.
He still remains a one-club player, played for Blackpool for all his career. But he's seen those changes go on and then gone on to manage as well, went on to manage Bolton, got them promoted from Division 3 up to Division 2. He also managed Leeds. He took them to the European Cup final in 75. He had a good career, you would say, in management, and then went into journalism.
Yes.
So I managed to see everything and yet still managed to remain quite grounded even though you can see how much football would have changed from when he started in the 50s to when he was reporting on it up to just a few years ago regularly.
Well, I think that's why it's such a loss in many ways to football coverage and to football fans, because he gave us that connection with the genesis of the modern game, when football players were working class in every respect and weren't earning profoundly more money than many of their peers in other jobs. Or if they were earning more money, they weren't earning it anything like for as long as other people in other jobs. It sounds a bit romantic, but I'm not suggesting that made him a better pundit, but it gave him a perspective, I think, that he brought with him that, of course, now is gone, because he's gone. It's the way of things, it's the passing of time. But I think it's noteworthy and very sad.
It's easy to say that there will be no one like him again, in as far as broadcast is concerned, because he came from a different time.
Yeah, yeah.
And even though he was there to witness all of these changes, we can't look forward and see how the game is going to change and reinvent itself over the next 50 years, because I don't think anyone could have predicted how it would have gone from when his career started.
Certainly not, no.
But what would make him different to, say, the current crop of pundits? And I'm not talking about, like, you know, the fact that they'll just try and say anything just to be provocative, or just to try and gain...
That's the disappointing, because that was the first thing that I was going to answer.
Yeah.
He didn't do that, so his era of journalism is not based upon the internet, it's not based upon clickbait.
Yeah.
And it isn't based upon expressing populist views. Expressing populist views predates the internet, of course.
Sure.
I mean, the great exponent of that was Jimmy Greaves on Satan Greavesy.
Oh, yeah.
Who was brought in there to sort of, like, you know, espouse, you know, what would be unkindly regarded as sort of like man down the pub kind of views about football.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, Armfield predates all of that, and that was just never his shtick. These days, we have a lot more of it, because you're encouraged. Social media is bound in with football coverage, particularly on audio. Well, in fact, on video as well, what am I saying? And the message is very much to appeal to your listener and to the punter's emotions.
Yeah.
And so that's why you get guys like Chris Sutton and Robbie Savage, who do precisely that. They come up with inflammatory opinions that are designed to get you all worked up. TalkSport have been doing it for a long time as well.
Mm.
But Armfield didn't do that. He wasn't from that place, and he never changed in that respect. I mean, he saw a lot of changes, and he was able to react to those changes. But he didn't. I don't think he ever altered his style as a consequence. His style of delivery was always the same, and I would put that also down to just simply, you know, the number of games that he played, the era in which he played. Again, as I said, it was not an era of super rich, super wealthy footballers, or even necessarily superstar footballers, although they were famous back then, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But he also played for that England team during the 1960s, which is a very, very good side, and culminated, although he never played, but he was in the 1966 World Cup. So his background in football is very different to modern pundits, their background is, you know, 90s, noughties, perhaps, you know, 80s football. I'd say the only guys who are left over from the before time are guys like Phil Thompson, who played in the late 60s and 70s, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and they're that last touchstone from that era, really. And they've just gone the full Soccer Saturday, which is these days seems to be trying to get people to, as you know, worked up about stuff as they possibly can, so that they can find themselves on people's Twitter timelines. But so that's what I'd say was the deal with Armfield, and that what makes him such a distinguished and perhaps a more dignified pundit. I'm not certain that the current crop will necessarily be remembered in quite the same way, although I'm sure they will be remembered and celebrated.
Mm. I find that fascinating, because the term football man, especially in the echo chamber that is my Twitter timeline, is seen as a pejorative term.
Mm.
of old-fashioned English football ideals and a backward way of thinking. And yet I would class Jimmy Armfield as a proper football man.
Yeah, I would remove the quotation marks from from that.
Yeah.
Jimmy Armfield understood the modern game, I think.
Yeah.
But he understood the modern game, but he was also his experiences of playing, managing and watching football enriched his perspective whilst remaining relevant, frankly.
Yeah.
As a football podcaster, I won't call myself a pundit, but as a football podcaster and occasional writer on the subject, that is how I would like to be seen.
Yeah.
You know, how I would like to. That's how I aspire. I aspire to you know, be understanding of the way football is seen and watched these days, and the way it is these days.
Yeah.
While at the same time using the embarrassing number of years that I've been on this planet to reinforce that experience, and so that it adds some kind of depth and perspective. And I think Jimmy Armfield, being given the background that he had, was very, very good at that. And I mean, and that's why when he retired, he was such a loss. And I'm not convinced that we necessarily have that now. But you know, at the same time, we've got a new wave, I guess, of pundits that have come through. And you know, even though they've been around for a few years, they're perhaps still bedding in. I mean, we've got guys like, you know, Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher at Sky, who I think could easily be the progenitors of Armfield, because they're not quite a sensationalist, but they've also played a heck of a lot of football.
Yeah.
And they do think about it and analyse it and spend a lot of time. I mean, they're professionals, good pros.
Another sport, I know, but I heard an interview with Bob Willis, the cricketer, a few months ago, and he was talking about his early forays into broadcasting. And he said that in his early days, all he would do was comment on the play. And if something bad happened, he'd say, oh, that's unfortunate, or you know, it was unlucky there.
All right.
And basically he was told, well, you know, you're not going to get anywhere. We're going to get people on who are going to be more dynamic than you.
Right.
And now he's got this programme called The Verdict, where he just slags off everyone.
Right.
And on the day's play.
Right. Oh, is he on that show? Is it?
Yeah.
I've seen
he's the one who basically is the main hatchet man on it now.
Okay.
And
interesting.
And that's how he's reinvented himself to become this man of, like, someone who's, like, you know, steeped in cricket tradition. Yeah. You know, he's been around for donkeys, and now he's just basically someone who runs Sky's post-match analysis and just sticks a hatchet in on everyone.
Perhaps that's the another element of Armfield's, the reason why he's so well-respected and why he was so good at what he did, was he had the right platform.
Yeah.
Perhaps Five Live was, you know, is a very small C conservative platform, isn't it? It hasn't really changed much since it was Radio 2. I mean, there's a clear lineage there. I'm sure the personnel behind the scenes have changed many times over.
Yeah, 606 being the exception. I suppose.
606 being, yeah. I mean, I think that allows that network its expression to have its big angry outbursts. Yeah, I mean, the new shows that they do. Not new, but the daily shows that they do, the discussion shows, you know, they can get on there, they can be lively. I mean, they can talk sport up with the best of them. But in terms of the coverage of the actual live coverage of the games,
yeah,
I would say it's still pretty measured and by and large pretty dignified. It depends on who is in there, but I mean, it that's what I would say.
But that's fine for a couple of guys who are rapidly approaching 50. But how does that play with the younger market?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, you'd have to look at the listening figures. Yeah. But I would suggest to you that a wide variety of people of different ages will listen to Five Live. Because, you know, I mean, some of the kids, of course, they have access to the internet and they have access to streams in the way that the older ones don't. But I wouldn't be massively surprised if particularly youngsters, you know, kids, you know, not the kids, I mean kids, you know, children.
Actual kids.
Actual kids, not the kids. I wouldn't be surprised if they, you know, would listen to Five Live with, you know, older family members, dads, uncles, granddads and stuff like that in the car or, you know, elsewhere, you know, where they don't have Sky. Frankly, because it's really expensive and not all families can afford it. And so, and it might well be that Five Live, you know, does unify families in a way that that perhaps Sky can't, you know, when you don't have it. But yeah, of course, you know, once they hit 14, 15, they're hitting their laptops and opening up the streams and watching it there. But I think that Five Live, I wouldn't be surprised if Five Live appeals to a varied age group. Wouldn't surprise me at all.
Of course, one of the great sadnesses of Jimmy Armfield passing away this week was the fact that it came so quickly after Cyril Regis.
Yes.
As well.
Yes. Yes, we never really got the opportunity to talk about that.
Because we only found out timing. Before we came into record last week.
Yeah, obviously a considerably younger age as well to go. A guy who had fought a number of battles, and I mean, there's a genuine sadness at the news of Cyril's passing. But I mean, he's just worth just remembering him as being an absolute powerhouse of a striker. You know, they say this a lot about players that have passed away, but no doubt in my mind he would have been absolutely fine playing in the Premier League right now. I mean, I think he'd have been an absolute boss.
Yeah.
Against modern centre-halves. He'd have adjusted his game.
Yeah.
And, you know, by any definition, a decent bloke who's had to take an awful lot of abuse and unpleasantness in his life.
And you would have hoped, actually, he would have probably been even better in this day and age because he might have got a bit more protection than he did back then.
Yeah, he wouldn't have taken nearly as much shit as he did back then. And one can, when we're in our position, we can only imagine what that must have been like. So for him, you know, to have made a career out of it and then to be remembered with fondness and to be remembered as a dignified and a decent human being is quite the legacy to leave. So a great sadness, but someone that should be celebrated, I think, and
certainly, certainly. Well, it's been a bit of a low podcast, but I think we can look back on these people and...
Warmth and reverence, you know, they deserve a bit of warmth and reverence.
Yes.
From, you know...
Our lives were enriched by them.
Definitely, no question about it.
Yes. In other news this week, we found out that Philip Neville might be the new boss of the England women's team.
That's a weird one, isn't it?
That is weird.
Is it a weird one? You were mentioning Tracy Neville to me.
I wonder if that's who they were really going for.
Yeah, maybe that's actually who it's going to be because Tracy Neville doesn't have her badges. So they're getting Phil Neville because he does have his badges.
Yeah.
Ooh, that could be it, actually.
Maybe it's like a brother and sister dream team on the...
We should explain. Tracy Neville is the coach of England national netball team, which is boss, by the way.
Yeah, he's an utter boss.
And that, we're not joking here. This is not like, you know, stupid, arrogant Englishman being stupid and arrogant. No, our netball team is boss. So,
It would be winning gold medals if it was an Olympics ball.
If it was Olympics
ball. But unfortunately, because men won't play it, then that it can't become an Olympics ball.
Yeah, I know, that's really, really bad, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Yeah, that's actually majorly shit.
It is.
Yeah.
But hey, you know, we make up all these rules to say, you know, you can't have this sport here if you don't let women play it. And then all of a sudden when it's turned around, it's
didn't think it through.
didn't think it through, did yeah. Yeah.
Who knew there'd be a downside to misogyny? Who knew? Nobody told us this. Anyway, yeah, so Phil Neville, that is an odd one. No coaching experience. No, I mean, cone carrying, yes, but I mean, no managerial experience.
Yeah, what is more odd? Is it more odd that Phil Neville's been given the England women's coaching job? Well, we don't know if it's been confirmed.
It's not been confirmed, so we don't know.
So is that more weird than Ryan Giggs being given the Welsh job?
No, it's as weird.
It's as weird.
It's as weird because neither of them have any direct managerial experience. And it shouldn't be, and Phil Neville getting it, the England women's job shouldn't be weirder simply because he's working with a different gender.
Well, luckily, both of them have inherited really good teams.
Yes.
So you know, they're not going to be shown up.
No.
Well, unless they turn those really good teams into something really awful.
I mean, I wonder with that, with the England team, whether or not they are looking to bring somebody in who it is from outside. Maybe they feel that it's time for a completely fresh face.
Yes.
Rather than bringing in somebody else who might have some experience in coaching women's teams. Maybe they just don't want to go down that road. Maybe the whole unpleasantness from last year has just made them think, let's just bring somebody in from outside. And I would, and although Phil Neville is close to the FA, I think he's sufficiently removed to qualify. And yeah, I mean, it would be funny, but maybe, I mean, it's not like he will get advice from his sister.
Yeah.
because there's got to be some crossover.
Oh, no. There's
got to be some crossover.
Yeah.
Particularly in terms of best practice and professionalism.
Yes.
Which are lessons that need to be desperately learned. So perhaps he is a bit of a cipher.
Maybe.
Yeah. Maybe we should just start calling him Tracy from now on. And be done with it.
Well, if it can be as good as her, then, you know, then fine.
Mm. Yes, well, he should be proud of it then in that case.
Indeed, so. Well, it's my turn to do the box set this week, and it's going to be quite an easy one because it's the fourth round of the FA Cup this weekend. Ooh. So I'm going to write load of previews on that. And I think the only other one I'm going to put in is Marseille Monaco, which is late on Sunday night.
Oh, right, yeah, no, you've got to put that one in.
Yeah. Well, they're actually, I mean, now that that PSG have slipped up a little bit, the gap has actually closed a bit up there.
You don't say?
They're only 8 points clear at the top now.
Mm. What's going on with PSG then, is it?
They just can't win away from
too
home.
Much in, oh, right, maybe yeah. Too many infighting. Too much infighting.
Yeah, maybe that. Yeah, maybe that. That. Maybe that. But if you want to find out my hot takes on this weekend's FA Cup action, then get yourself to tinyletter.com/soundoffootball. Do it now. Go on, do it now.
Do it now. It's a free newsletter.
Yeah, and it's full of hot takes.
It has got blistering takes, and it's not just, you know, previews. It's also the opportunity to, you know, for us to expand, you know, our opinions on whatnot.
Yes, exactly. And also, it allows us to be witty, doesn't it?
It does allow us to be witty.
Yeah.
Yes.
And, you know, you love our sparkling wit, don't you?
Yes, indeed. Our sallies of wit.
Of course, you'd prefer them even more if Jan was here, like, you know,
yeah,
just chipping in with his two penneth.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah.
And hopefully he'll be back.
Hopefully he will be back on Monday.
Yes. Mm. But that's all we've got time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, and from Terry and Philip, it's goodbye.
Goodbye.
You can contact us through our website, sofpodcast.com, via Twitter, @soundoffootball, or on facebook.com/soundoffootball.
Oh, God, there's going to be Gwen Stefani going on right now, isn't there?
Yeah, damn straight, yeah.